Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks for tuning in to listen, as we've got always got great topics pertinent to faithful family life from a Lutheran worldview right here on listener-supported worldwide KFUO. A conversation ahead of us today. You've heard me talk about being a director of Christian education, a DCE, rostered in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and glad to be so, being a part of the National Association of DCEs today, actually celebrating 14 years as a director of Christian education. So, it's great to get to serve the Lord in this way. Some might ask, what does a DCE do? We talked about that before here on Faith and Family. I have the chance to talk with two other DCEs, my fellow DCEs today, and we're going to have a great conversation about what they do in the parish, in the church, as directors of Christian education. How do they support faithful family life? So we're going to talk with them here in just a little bit. Hope you can join us for that conversation. I'd like to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, go to our website, kfuo.org. Look for the sponsor section. There you'll find the CUW logo, Concordia University, Wisconsin, in the sponsor section. Click on that. That'll take you to their page. You can find out about the programs they have to offer, where they're located, all the great things that Concordia University, Wisconsin is doing. And they're located in a lot of places. Yes, their main campus is in Mequon, Wisconsin, but they have education centers all over the place, so including one right here in St. Louis, right across the street. So go check it out. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Go to kfuo.org and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. Joining me in studio today, you've heard me talk about being a director of Christian education before, and it's nice to have in studio today two fellow DCEs. Joining me in studio today is Leslie Leonard, a DCE and director of Youth and Recreational Ministries at Christ the King Lutheran Church in Largo, Florida. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Andy.
Thanks so much for bringing some sunshine with you today.
I try.
We appreciate it coming all the way from Largo, Florida to spend some time with us and also serve as a member at large with the National Association of DCEs, correct?
That's correct, yep.
So, which brings you here to St. Louis today, and so we'll get to talk about NADCE as well in a little bit. Also joining us in studio today, Andrew Nelson, a DCE and a Youth and Family Life Director at Chapel of the Cross here in St. Peter's, Missouri. Andrew, welcome to Worldwide KFUO.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to spend some time with some fellow DCEs in studio today. For those who are not familiar with DCEs, Directors of Christian Education, give us an idea. What is a DCE? What is it? We'll start with Andrew and we'll go to Leslie. What is a DCE?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's important to know that we're educators and we're called to the parish for lifespan education, whether it's the little ones or the older generation, all across the generation, we're called to share the love of Jesus and create disciples and form faith and equip adults then also to pass the faith on to the next generation.
Leslie, is there something you'd like to add to that?
I was going to say, that's a great way to put it. So good job. It's definitely about helping faith formation across the lifespan. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge part of what we do. And it is equipping parents and adults to share it with our younger generations who get it from them, quite honestly. So that's the fun part of our job.
There are some misconceptions about what DCEs are.
Yep.
There are some misconceptions, and just what you've shared today, lifespan educators servants in matters of faith formation are some of the key terms that I've heard you use, and certainly some of the terms that I use as well. What are some misconceptions about what DCEs are?
I would say probably one of them is that we all play guitar and we just know how to play silly games. And that's kind of the root of what we do, which it is a part of what we do. I mean, because fellowship
leads.
You
haven't heard me play guitar.
Yeah.
It's really not a good example.
I strum really well, but that's about it. But part of what we do is fellowship, which leads to educational opportunities and mm-hmm. relationships. But it's by far the smaller amount of time that we spend in our jobs and even in our volunteerism at the church as well, is the fun activities, which is, I think, the misconception a lot of the time.
So one of the misconceptions is that we're the Mr. Fun or Mrs. Fun, and it's all about being the person that brings the fun. Well, that might be part of the work we do.
It's not the main part of what we do, the crux, yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest misnomers I encounter is that we just are youth directors. Although many of us have primary focuses with youth, you know, mm-hmm. my title is Youth and Family Life Director, and that's my number one deal. But we spend so much of our time developing programming and creating faith formation with adults and with young adults, with children, mm-hmm. and with whole family units, as a lot of things in our congregations are tending towards this intergenerational idea. We're not just youth directors, but rather directors of the entire Christian education spectrum across the ages. And I think that's an important thing to note to people.
Now, Leslie, you have a unique title, Director of Youth and Recreational Ministries. Now, that sounds like somebody who gets to have fun.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Tell us about your work at Christ the King in Largo, Florida. What are your responsibilities? What is it that you enjoy about your work there?
Well, first of all, my title, Youth and Recreational Ministries, youth at this church is 0 to 18. So it really is children and youth lumped into one word. And then Recreational Ministries is one of the just kind of heart of the congregation was to have someone who could lead people in a different kind of fellowship and sports ministry kind of area. And recreation isn't just sports. It's also we do family picnics and we do you know, walks in the park, and we live near the beach, so we have beach days and things of that nature. And so, you know, we're just now starting to get into doing softball and volleyball and basketball and those kind of things, because for a lot of people, that's a great way to fellowship and build relationship that then helps future things happen with education and Bible studies and just even connecting people to the congregation in unique ways. And that's really the heart of the recreational ministries aspect of my job. So,
and you have to do that all in sunshine near the beach.
Yeah, it's rough life. You know,
sure.
Those beach days, you know, that you have to go to after church with, you know, 30 or 40 family members and
picnics,
you know,
on the beach. Yeah, it's a
hard.
Rough life.
It's hard. And we do sunset devotions. It's pretty killer, let me tell you. It's pretty bad.
We have beaches and sunsets here in St. Louis, too.
They're we just, do. Not as
not
much
quite
sand.
As exciting. Yeah.
Let's define the word beach.
No. Water.
Yeah. More gravel than sand.
I was in Minnesota for many years as a DCE, and they like to call it beach, too. And I beg to differ now that I live in Florida. There is awesome things that happen no matter what part of the country you're in with those things. But yeah, it's definitely, I'm as I call myself, a beach snob now.
Well, good for you.
And it depends on what coast you're on in Florida, too.
Very yes. much so.
But that's for another day.
Exactly.
My preference is for the Gulf Coast as well.
But
the Atlantic Coast has its advantages, but I like the Gulf Coast. Now, how about the Midwest Coast, Andrew? Tell us about the work that you do as Youth and Family Life Director at Chapel of the Cross here in St. Peter's, Missouri.
Yeah. You know, the title is very self-explanatory. You know, youth ministry is my primary focus right now. I was what we like to refer in the office as kind of the last piece into reconstructing our staff. And one of the things that maybe we didn't mention earlier about DCE ministry is this aspect of team. And I feel very equipped and uplifted in my team ministry with the senior and associate pastor at Chapel. And so I spend a lot of my time in youth ministry focused greatly in the senior high youth as well as junior high youth and confirmation. And then I get to act as more of a director, more of an administrator, working with a lot of really great volunteers in terms of Sunday school and Vacation Bible School, and beginning to change our focus from, you know, age-specific and striated ministries to more of a family focus, where we're trying to combine our efforts to engage the whole family, to equip our parents at home, providing training and resource pieces to send to them. And so now that the youth ministry is starting to kind of hit a flow and, you know, find its stride since I've been there, we're beginning to engage the family a little bit more and dream about what that could look like and cast that vision to try and make it happen in our church.
You bring up an interesting point. The helping families, helping parents is a key part of what you do in the parish as directors of Christian education. I would say almost historically, but it's not that long ago. In our history, in American culture, especially in American Christianity, this role of youth minister or youth leader, someone who works with youth in the church, has kind of been someone who takes on many of the roles of parent, many of the qualities and characteristics of being the friend of the youth, but also kind of stepping in and taking on some of the characteristics or qualities that a parent normally would have. How is what you're doing like that or different from that?
Well, I think it's important that as a youth director, or as a leader, you create what you would call that other adult relationship. And what I like to do is to walk alongside a parent and, you know, give them another voice, a voice of support. Mm-hmm. And I see myself very much as a partner, where parents, I'm hoping, and we're trying to help them do A, B, and C. And then what we're doing through our programming and through our ministry is reinforcing those points, or vice versa, providing those points and giving parents the abilities to reinforce those, so that we're not working against each other, but rather what they're hearing at home is matching what they're hearing at church, and what they're doing at church is matching what they're doing at home as a family, whatever, you know, whatever that family unit looks like. And so I think that's an important partnership that the church has.
Leslie, for you in the parish, in how key are parents in what we call youth ministry?
Well, they're definitely the ones that help it run, quite honestly, because I'm one person, or mm-hmm. even if I have a couple other volunteers, there's only so many events that we can coordinate and do, and so the parents help immensely. And as Andrew was saying, they're also partners in that ministry with you, because it's about equipping parents and youth for faith formation for life. Mm-hmm. You know, there's obviously this stigma that confirmation is graduation and you're done with your formation. And one of the things that we're really working hard on at our church, and I think most churches are, is how do we help kids and parents realize that it's not a graduation day, and that faith is lifelong journey. You know, we call ourselves lifespan educators. Mm-hmm. So it's about equipping parents and youth to for the long haul of the journey, not just the short term 4 years that maybe we see them, and even 4 years that we might see parents, you know.
For a faith that we grow into, not grow out of.
Exactly. Because it's always changing and flowing. I mean, mine has grown immensely as I've grown up. And that's also a testament to my parents showing me how theirs grows. And the conversations we have now as adults is totally different. And that's also just neat for us to then be able to relate that to parents we know today who are struggling with kids that are, you know, in this bad decision or this thing, or, you know, never at church because they're always with this event or sports or whatever. And it's like, it's part of the journey and encouraging them in that journey too, which is what happens for us a lot of the time too, is the encouragement in the journey is sometimes just as important as the education in the journey.
Do you often, how do you counteract this mentality, this cultural mentality that I drop off my kids and they go get their Jesus time with you, and then I come back and pick them up later on, or somebody else will come pick them up and bring them to me later on. How do you deal with that on a day-to-day basis? How do you deal with that in the work that you do on a regular basis? How do you, Andrew, you use the word, you know, come alongside parents working and partner. You both use the word partnering with parents, that they're key in this. That's a challenge that we face. It's cultural change.
Very much.
How do you face that cultural change?
It's a lot of building relationships with families from early on, quite honestly, from the time the kids are starting Sunday school and preschool. You have this opportunity to get to know people and to work with them from day one, baby breath, you know. Mm-hmm. And that helps. Obviously, if you come in the middle of things, that's a different story. But I think it's really about building those relationships with people, because then they want to partner with you because they see you working to be with them. And I think that's the heart of how I work within my parents and my youth is building a relationship with them so that we're on the journey together, because I want people with me that are, you know, struggling higher, lower, you know, I want mm-hmm. everybody. I want the full gamut of experience with me, because it helps me to grow. And I think it helps others to grow.
Well said.
Yeah.
Very well said.
That's a good way to put it.
Let's back up in time a little bit. What led you to consider training and formation for this life as a DCE?
That's a long story. It's a God thing. It's truly, for me, it's totally a God thing. I a second career DCE. So I had a whole other life before I became a DCE. As I always say, I went to college right out of high school, got a degree in theater, and started working in theater, and then God just kind of started calling again, pulling at my heartstrings. I found a church to belong to with my parents again after moving away for a few years for college, and he just did crazy things that I just never imagined I would be doing. I always knew I'd be connected to church, but I didn't think I'd work at a church doing what I do today. And I went up, my sister had gone back to school as well. She went up to St. Paul, Concordia St. Paul, went up and visited her one weekend, ended up applying and going within 3 months. It was a leap of faith, and it was all God led. And
had you met a DCE before this?
I didn't know what a DCE was until my sister went to school to become a DCE. No clue.
How did she know about DCEs?
I don't know. You have to ask her. I don't know.
What's her number? I'll give her a call.
Yeah. She actually lives here in St. Louis. Let me call her. But I had no clue because we just didn't have that in the church I grew up in.
Yeah.
We had two pastors and we had a youth pastor, and he was wonderful and great and really taught me a lot. But I literally didn't know what a DCE was until I went to school to become one, which is kind of also really cool because you know it's a God thing then when he just says, I'm calling you and you just need to go. And I went, and 10 years later, here I am.
Very good.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have an interesting story to follow up with that. Whereas you did not know what a DCE was, my father is a career director of Christian education. And so I grew up with one in my house, and which is an interesting experience looking back on. Because as a child and as a teenager, I was keenly aware of how the church works and the good things and the bad things and the ugly things of ministry and team ministry and, just all the things that happen in a church. And so I had teachers at the Lutheran high school that I attended, as well as both of my parents, kindly and very subtly urging me into the ministry and just notes of encouragement and simple things. I appreciate what you did there. Have you ever thought about the ministry? And my response was, essentially no way. And so taking some of my life experiences, more so focusing on the bad ones, I had a mindset of, I don't really want to be a part of working in the church. And so I ended up, my big brother, 2 years before me, went to Concordia Seward to pursue a teaching degree. And I had an athletic scholarship opportunity there. And after visiting him and seeing, how cool it could be to go to college with my brother, and the campus of Concordia Seward being one of those places that just sucks you in and you can't ever explain why or how. But I ended up applying and joining the soccer team there, and just being an undeclared major, and again through some poking and prodding of DCEs, professors and other friends, my freshman year, I finally kind of noticed that God had been trying to open that door for so many years, and finally it was opened, and I wouldn't change it for anything. It's been an awesome experience.
Didn't have anything to do with Dr. Mark Blonky or anything like that, did it?
Well, I don't even know if I had met him all that much, but I'm glad that door opened, because that is truly a relationship that I treasure as a mentor and a friend these days. So
you both had different paths, but ended up as directors of Christian education, lifespan educators, serving in the church. Looking back on your formation, what were some of the key times as a DCE? What were some of the things that you learned? What are some of the things that you studied to become a DCE? What were some of the things that stood out for you in that formation that you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Obviously, we take the Old and New Testament classes and Lutheran confessional classes and the theology things like that. And those were wonderful, obviously, because at that point in my life, I really hadn't read through the Bible. And so that was obviously just a really neat opportunity. Obviously, you have to do it for homework and all that kind of fun stuff. But it also then opened me up to now that becoming part of my daily life, which is awesome. I would say some of the classes that really shaped and formed me, I took a youth and family ministry class that was taught by DCEs, and not professors at the school. Not that that's a bad thing, but by field DCEs. And I think that that just gave some real life practical experience to what I was doing or getting into, I should say, since I didn't really know what a DCE was. But really blessed by that, and it just turned into great mentoring relationships then also in the St. Paul area for me with fellow DCEs that I would eventually serve with, you know. And so that was awesome. Counseling classes, psychology classes, tons of education classes, you know, just on how to teach, methodology, you know, kids, adults. I mean, the whole gamut, you take everything. All those things have actually helped to form the way in which, obviously, I function as a DCE. But I really, really relied on a lot of conversations with other DCEs and other professors, quite honestly, even at St. Paul, that have helped form to who I am as a DCE today. So, and past experience of life. So,
yeah, you know, and all the programs at the different CUS schools are different in their good ways. But everybody will tell you that it's that great mix of theology courses, of psychology courses, and then education courses where we are trained, you know, formally to teach to multiple generations, which really helps. But, you know, for me, it's that 12-month internship experience. You know, I could sit in the classroom all day, you know, for years and years. But getting out in a parish on my own, being in charge of ministries and boards and youth groups, and working alongside a pastor who's willing to help you learn and grow as still a student, and interacting with a congregation who is willing to support you as you fall, but on this and on the same token, they're willing to look at you as a professional. And that 12-month internship experience was, you know, just a lot of good things and a lot of bad things that even now and probably the rest of my career, I'll look back on those things as, you know, I'm doing this because I learned on my internship experience that through that situation.
And very formative.
Yes, very much so. And very much glad that that's a part of the training and experience.
I went into field work and then internship thinking I was going to just strictly do children's ministry for the rest of my life because that was my heart. And then through some forcefulness by a certain DCE, she made me do junior high ministry for like 6 months out of my time. And I was like, oh, I don't like junior hires. And now I adore junior high and senior high ministry. And it's definitely the area that the Lord has now shown me that's the gift that I have. And so you go in with a preconceived notion, even into internship and field work, you know, the year before internship. And then God and others show you that, no, this is where you're going. So that's the cool part of internship. It really does form you.
For my internship, the first 2 days of internship were actually spent on a retreat with some of the leaders in the congregation. And it was focused on Sabbath and rest. And that's how we started my internship. I mean, it wasn't set up for that to be the beginning of my internship. They just the board for youth and education happened to be doing that at that time of year, and so that was my first few days on internship. But it actually set a really good tone for being healthy as a church worker and making sure that you learn to balance that time between your rest time, your work time, time with family, Are those, what are some of the challenges that you face? Is that something that you face as a church worker trying to balance time with you know, personal time or family time and rest and those types of things? How do you do that? I mean, because it's not like it's a 9-to-5 type of job where you clock in the morning, you go sit at your desk and work for a few hours and then you go home. I mean, sometimes you have to go to the beach and do work there.
It's rough.
I think it's, you know, it's a tough balance because ministry happens all the time. And you just have to, part of it is helping to educate your congregation about, you know, what are the boundaries that I need to set as an individual, whether you're single, whether you're married, whether you have children. I've been very blessed with my staff right now and my pastor at my first congregation that they're very, very much aware of how much they're working and how much I'm working. And, you know, when they see me going and going and going, they're able to kind of rein me back in and say, you need to take this time away. And being able to share the load so that neither of us mm-hmm. do get overworked. And I think that's a wonderful thing, because you need to be there when you need to be there, but you also need to be able to step away and say, I can't be there next time if I don't get away now. Mm-hmm. And the Lord is pretty good about calling you to those moments too, and saying, whether it's a physical thing or an emotional sure. thing, saying, hey, this is your breaking point, and I'm telling you right now, you need to just, rest with me for a minute. Mm-hmm. And whatever that looks like, in your personal life and yep. your spiritual life, the Lord is always providing in that way. And my staff and team has been more than beneficial to help me stay accountable to that.
That's great. I think it's, as Andrew said, it's about establishing boundaries pretty quickly, especially this is my second call that I'm at, just like Andrew's at his second. And I learned a lot in my first call about what not to do mm-hmm. in certain situations, in certain times of the year. Obviously, there's times of the year we just go nonstop.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of the beast. I mean, December, Christmas, it's go, go, go. Easter, it's go, go, go. And that's just it. But then you also have to learn how to compensate other times of the year to get that Sabbath, to get that rest, to get that time for yourself, your family, your friends, whatever helps you rejuvenate so that you are on track for ministry. So boundaries is a huge thing to establish mm-hmm. right away. And that is one thing I always tell the program directors at Concordia, is that's one thing I wish that we'd really talked more about with field DCEs mm-hmm. in classes, was how do you do that? How do you have the chutzpah your first day on the call to go, I'm taking Fridays off, or whatever that is. So I think that's something that I like to share and encourage all church workers. It doesn't matter if you're a DCE, teacher, pastor, whatever you are, set some good boundaries for yourself right away so that you're healthy for the congregation. Because if you show yeah. the congregation good health, the congregation will show you good health, I think.
Mm-hmm. My internship supervising pastor was great about that and helping block out time. And he had a nice system for that that worked well for me. And it was very organized, but yet it was flexible enough that everyone's needs could be met, the congregation as well as mine, and worked really well. So, yeah. But you do have to, you're right, you have to set that up early on. And in my program, when I was studying to become a DCE, getting to meet DCEs out in the field and seeing some who were doing it well, but mostly those who were burning out, and finding out what was common among those who were exhausted or on the verge of burning out. And it was because they weren't taking that time to rest and recoup. And no one ever wants to resent the work that they do in the church, because it's for a good reason, right?
Yep.
We don't want to resent that. But it is important to take care of our church workers and make sure that they're taking time to rest. And that was something I was able to see out in the field, and have since been vigilant about making sure that I take that time to rest, and in order to be healthy for the sake of the ministry, for the sake of the work that we're given to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's important too, because as church workers, the congregation sees what we do. And if we want to help our families be faithful to mm-hmm. to Sabbath and rest, but we are not being faithful to that, we're not setting a good example for parents and families who are dealing with the same things too, whether it's their work schedules and their kids' activities, they're going and going and going too. And if we're telling them they need to take a rest and prioritize in their family, but they don't see us doing that, it doesn't necessarily set a good example. But saying, hey, this is important work that I'm doing, and so is the work that you're doing, but God calls us to rest and to take moments to just be with our families and just be with God. And I think that's wonderful, not only for church workers, but mm-hmm. for us to pass on to our congregation members as well, who in our day and age are
right,
burning at both ends.
Yeah, we live in a very busy society, and yeah. I'm sure you see it day to day in your congregations.
And Jesus had to sometimes tell the disciples, I need time
sure.
by myself mm-hmm. to talk to my Father. And he didn't have a problem saying that. And so that's another part of the inspiration that the Lord can be to us, is to say, yeah, you know what? I need an hour, even if it's just an hour a week.
Right.
I need an hour to breathe and to be with him. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's definitely, and Andrew said about teams, if your team can support you in that, that's great. And if you can continue to encourage and support teams, laity, whoever in that. It's hugely important.
We need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue our conversation with Leslie Leonard and Andrew Nelson, both DCEs serving out in the field in their parishes, Leslie at Christ the King Lutheran Church in Largo, Florida, and Andrew at Chapel of the Cross in St. Peter's, Missouri. We'll continue the conversation, more Faith and Family, right after this break on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration and action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
How much is one human life worth? According to Planned Parenthood, it's $313.29. While Abby Johnson ran a Planned Parenthood abortion mill in Texas, she asked her boss why they wanted her to double the number of abortions she was already doing. The answer was, because that's where the money is. For every baby killed by abortion, the nation's largest provider and promoter of abortion pockets over $300. And in order to line their pockets with more blood money, they have to increase the number of babies being killed. All the while, they're telling the media their goal is to reduce the number of abortions being done. You see, it's not about women's rights or even their health. It's only about the money.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, Craig D'Onofrio here. I want to invite you to join me Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. for Reformation Rush Hour. We'll have some of today's most interesting and intelligent people on the show. We'll talk about news that affects your faith. We'll look at the world around you and talk about how it interacts with Christianity. And we'll have a good time doing it all. This is the fastest hour in radio as you drive home Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. right after Issues Etc. on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listening to Worldwide KFUO on the go with your smartphone doesn't mean you have to walk around with earbuds all day. You can Bluetooth across the room to a speaker system in your home or listen on radios that have built-in smartphone cradles. There are many easy ways to listen to WorldwideKFUO.org on the air, online, and on demand. We proclaim the clear gospel message of Christ crucified for our sins. The messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.
Hi, I'm Pastor Ted Lesh, pastor at Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church in North St. Louis County, inviting you to listen to our KFUO radio worship broadcasts on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. Active worship, preaching, music, and singing are part of every one of our services at Chapel. Join us Sunday nights at 6. It's one more broadcast worship opportunity for you from your friends at Chapel of the Cross and KFUO Radio.
Hello, I'm Rod Zwanitzer, Director of Broadcast for KFUO. We totally depend on the gracious supporters who want this gospel voice to continue and expand as the messenger of good news of Christ. A wonderful part of this support is our underwriters, an ever-increasing number, and so we ask you to find out who they are by checking them out on our website or as you hear them here on KFUO. Write, call, or tell them how much you appreciate their support of Worldwide KFUO.
Worldwide KFUO is the most trusted place for sacred music of the church, where every night of the year you can hear sacred music. Weeknights at 6 p.m., listen to sacred music on AM 850 KFUO in St. Louis, as well as streaming online at kfuo.org. Our online stream is in high-quality stereo, so you can hear the difference wherever you listen, on your computer, on Wi-Fi radio, and on your smartphone. We're Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks for being with us today as we're talking about directors of Christian education. DCEs is what we go by. And in studio with me today, Leslie Leonard, DCE and Director of Youth and Recreational Ministries at Christ the King Lutheran Church in Largo, Florida. And Andrew Nelson, DCE, Youth and Family Life Director at Chapel of the Cross, St. Peter's, Missouri. Both members of the Executive Board for National Association of Directors of Education, meeting here in St. Louis recently. And so you both get to have voices and be involved in this association of DCEs. What is, just briefly, what is NADCE? What is National Association of DCEs?
We exist to equip and encourage DCEs in the field and students as well, learning how to be DCEs. We have three key areas, and I'm probably going to forget one, but we have advocacy, mm-hmm. professional connections,
and resources.
I know that's it, but anyway, and in those, we are just here to be a great support system and voice mm-hmm. for DCEs at large, quite honestly.
And, you know, like we say, we are the professional organization for NADCEs. We see for NADCEs?
For DCEs.
As NADCE. And, you know, just a professional organization to understand the unique ministry opportunity that DCEs have in the parish.
Mm-hmm. Now, earlier you described DCEs as lifespan educators, particularly working in matters of faith formation, building relationships with youth, with parents, for the sake of that faith formation, making sure that the gospel is placed not only into the hands of youth, but also into the hands of parents so that it's carried into the home. And I'd like to talk about DCEs and pastors. What is the relationship between a DCE and a pastor? What is a DCE? What is not a DCE? How are DCEs like pastors? How are DCEs not like pastors? I'd like to talk about that. What is the relationship between DCE and pastor? Who wants to take a stab at that first?
I will. I believe that the relationship is we're teammates in the teaching, in mm-hmm. the lifespan education. Obviously, pastors have many different duties that they do that DCEs will never, well, I shouldn't say never, but I mean, in essence, will never do. They preach, they do sacraments, they, honestly, they're the ones that get the 3 a.m. phone call from someone who's in the hospital mm-hmm. and have to do those kind of tougher calls sometimes. I mean, not that we don't get some calls about, you know, our youth or families that are in trouble, but
at 3 a.m.
it is different. We sure. don't have that. We also aren't the shepherd of the congregation. We're a director and we work at shepherding people. But I feel like that's a huge distinction, at least at my congregation, is that our senior pastor is truly that shepherd, that guide, that vision for the church. And we have a role in parts of that, mm-hmm. but they're really kind of that overseer of the whole of the church, at least in my experience and in my knowledge. And we as DCEs and other, you know, workers in the kingdom mm-hmm. are part of the support cogs, you know, that help the thing run, the big machine run, I guess, if you want to use that kind of terminology. And we're an important part and we team together. I think that's a huge thing for me, is that no matter where you're at on the hierarchy of your chart lists, whatever, it really is about team ministry and working together for the glory of the Lord. Mm-hmm. And to, you know, our church motto is to know Christ and make him known. And that's really at the heart of, I think, most churches, is that that's what we're there to do. And we do that together as a team, as fellowship of believers.
Yeah, I think that team aspect is important, you know, and I kind of view my team ministry with my two full-time pastors and the one part-time pastor on staff. You know, it's like a good marriage. You know, there's a give and take, and there are some things that pastors are called to do in the congregation, you know, taking care of worship and the spiritual life in, you know, that way with sacraments and things like that. And then, you know, the DCE has that unique role in a congregation to focus on education, and we're trained in education and youth ministry and children's ministry and family ministry. And we can kind of bring that side of the congregation. And as we work together, you know, the whole congregation is lifted up and they see that worship is important. And we see
what God does for us in worship and how we respond in worship and, you know, the teaching and preaching of the word. And then we're encouraging and, you know, hopefully in some places putting that expectation on our members that Christian life, you know, and Christian education is that vital piece in addition to that, where we learn and grow in the word and apply what we're experiencing in worship in, you know, in an educational setting and raising up disciples that will bring up disciples of their own. And mm-hmm. so it's a beautiful marriage of team ministry in the parish. And, you know, it's something that's very important to the health of mm-hmm. a staff, that pastors and DCEs each understand their role and how they can work together to serve, you know, the church at large.
So it DCEs serve on a team. They work in partnership with pastors. And it sounds to me that communication is an important part of that partnership, that being a part of that team is having regular communication so that you can have a healthy relationship with one another, so that it's clear not only between you, but also to the congregation, what you're there to do, what the pastor is there to do, what pastors are called and given to do, what DCEs are given to do. Yeah. What is your call to your congregation? You have a title in your congregation, director of youth and recreation or youth and family. What does that mean in the congregation? How do you communicate that? That takes a lot of work.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. And it is constant communication. And it's, you know, my job title says one thing. My job description says a totally different thing. Because there's things that come up, or there's your ministry changes and flows as you are there more years and things mm-hmm. like that. And so, and even the pastors does. I mean, obviously they have some set things.
Sure.
But they're, everyone should be you know, in the ability to go with the flow of where the needs of your congregation is going, because at the heart of it, that we're there to serve mm-hmm. those people and help them, equip them, encourage them to become disciples, to then disciple others.
And being both a parish DCE and now serving, you know, in another setting here at Worldwide KFU, those having those strong relationships in a team setting are so important in order to be. In order to really be about what you're given to do and to do it well. What do you want parents of youth and children to know as a parish DCE? What is it that you want parents to know most? We were just talking about communication and the message that members of the congregation get. What is it that you want parents to know most as a DCE?
I think for me, it is for them to know and understand that God has called them, however well equipped they feel, that God has called the parents to be the primary faith formation mm-hmm. person leader. In yeah. the family, you know, yeah. and God's pretty clear that he puts that on the parents to teach the faith and to pass on the faith. And, you know, I just want my parents to know that I'm here to help them, you know, whether it's to give them formal training, whether it's to repeat what they say to their kids, you know, or whatever it is. I want them to know that I'm here to support them, but God has called them. And when God calls, he doesn't set you up for failure. And mm-hmm. that as parents, there are people like me and other people out there to help them along that road. But, you know, like it or not, as a parent, God has called you to be that primary leader of faith in the home.
God has called you to be a parent to these children, not me.
Yeah. And I think that's a huge yeah. distinction. A lot of parents do the drop-off mentality, or, you know, I've done my job up till this point. Now they're in high school and it's changed, and I don't know enough Bible, or I don't know enough theology.
I don't know the answers to their questions.
Exactly. And quite honestly, most of the time, neither do we. But we also then take the time to mm-hmm. find that answer sure. for them or work through it with them. Mm-hmm. And that's an encouragement to parents, too, is that you don't have to know the answers. You can seek it out. And that's why you have people like resources like DCE. Teachers, pastors, whatever that is to help you find those answers. You're not going to have them all. My parents boldly said that many times to me as a teenager. I don't know the answer to that question about religion or faith or math or whatever, but which I still question math. But yeah. but they said, but let's figure it out together. And I think that's a huge component of it too, is that we are here to be resources, but we're also here for the journey with them. And and we're always learning and growing. And if we're not, then that's another issue. But I definitely feel like, I mean, Andrew said it very well. We're here to encourage them because they are the first ones on the battlefield of everything. But we're here to encourage and equip them, not to do it for them.
I agree. I've always been suspicious of algebra.
Amen. I knew I liked you, Andy.
As a DCE, in what ways do you continue your education? How do you keep the blade sharp as a DCE? Are there things that you've been doing since you've been out in the field as a DCE over the last few years now? You each have been out in the field how many years now?
Friday will be 5 years since my commissioning into the ministry. So
wow.
Coming up.
Yeah, and September will be my 10-year anniversary in ministry.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. So it's kind of exciting. I'm constantly, obviously, there's conferences available, everything. I mean, you can go to youth, children's, I mean, and they're offered by many different organizations, including in the LCMS, where you can go and be fed in lots of different ways. So I do conferences. I also have taken some refresher courses at the local school or the local community college on some educational practices, even psychology. I've taken some more like child psychology, a deeper course than what we got St. Paul. I think there's always ways, and obviously there's people who are working on masters and thinking maybe about working on masters. Don't tell anybody I said that. Anyway, but I think there's always a call for us to be in some form of refinement of what we're doing. Yeah,
I think those are all great things. I have not gone back to school for a master's degree or any advanced degree yet. Although it's on my my goals list, but I think conferences and reading and I meet with a very active DCE cluster group here in St. Louis once a month, where we're always sharing, we're always critiquing one another, and just having discussions about ministry and good ways to do it and other new and innovative ways. But I think the number one thing is just being faithful to Scripture. And always growing in faith and keeping your Bible close, whether it's on your phone or your iPad or, a real book, and just being in God's Word and allowing Him to speak that way can go a long way for just keeping you sharp and keeping your spiritual blade sharp, so to speak, so that you can battle the fiery arrows of the devil and whatnot. So I think that's an important thing that DCEs, teachers, pastors, we often neglect, but need to remain faithful in Scripture and just following up with that.
Who have been some of the key people that have influenced you or that have impacted you as throughout your formation as a DCE and maybe even now in the field as a DCE? Who are some of the people that have influenced you the most or have been key in that formation?
I could probably name off about 100 different, I mean, just for different ways and different times, but some key people in my formation as a DCE would be like Audrey Dunsing-Werner, Christine Ide, Thad Warren, I'm trying to think of some different names, Carly Lyason, just really great people who were there when I went back as a student and was like, oh my gosh, I'm 20-something and going back to school again, but they really just helped me through that process and through figuring out what kind of DCE I would be. And so that's huge. And today it's really Dave Wiedner has been just a wonderful friend to me in the Florida Georgia District. And then my cluster, like you were saying, that there's this cluster of DCEs that I'm privileged to meet with once a month from my kind of geographical area there in Florida. And they just lift me up and encourage me. It's not just DCEs. We have a deaconess. We have a couple of lay youth ministers. We have a couple of DPM type people, music people. And we're just really blessed to have that encouragement when you're, like you said, struggles, good, even just reading a book together and those kinds of things. And so there's just tons of those that continually lift me up so that I'm ready for the journey that I'm on. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try and list names, but, hands down, my father has been my number one influencer. Growing up, you know, watching him interact with youth ministry kids and people in the parish, and then growing up and being scared that he was going to be my youth director and embarrass me or, you know, whatever else, all the way full circle to nearing the end of my training and, you know, just begging him for any sort of tips he could give me because I had no idea what I was going to be getting into. And now just being able to have conversations about ministry with him. And, you know, he always, in a very soft-spoken way, was urging me into ministry, but never saying, you have to do this, and just saying, have you considered? You know, I feel that God is giving you the gifts for this. And just his wealth of wisdom from 42 years of DCE ministry now has been just, you know, fantastic. And he's my number one guy still now. And he's retired now, so that helps. He's got nothing to do but talk to me about my problems. But he has been my number one supporter and influence in my ministry.
Outstanding. I know that every DCE has a story, and I appreciate you both taking time to share that story with us, share your stories with us today on Faith and Family, and to help our listeners understand what our directors of Christian education and how they serve in the congregation and in other settings as well. So thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us. Our guest today, Leslie Leonard, DCE Director of Youth and Recreational Ministries at Christ the King Lutheran Church in Largo, Florida. Leslie, thanks for being our guest on Faith and Family today.
Thanks, Andy.
Andrew Nelson, DCE and Youth and Family Life Director at Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church in St. Peters, Missouri. Andrew, thanks for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
You bet. My pleasure.
Stick around for Thy Strong Word up next with the Reverend William Whedon, host right here on listener-supported worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at kfuo.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.